This is the Plant Yourself Podcast. I'm Howard Jacobson of PlantYourself.com and WellStartHealth.com. This podcast is part of my mission to help you live a daring and defiant life. So a few months ago at Engine 2's plant stock in Black Mountain, North Carolina, I was asked to lead the morning runs. Big honor. And my job, of course, is to keep everybody together, so not to cater to the fastest or the slowest, but sort of be the glue that keeps everybody sort of jogging together. And one of the people who came out for the runs was this young woman named Emily Scamla, and she's fit, speedy. She was like pounding out 6-minute miles, and we did some hill repeats one day, and she was just smoking me. And so, you know, I figure, you know, she's young, like in her early 20s, whole food plant-based, fit, training, like, okay, so 6-minute miles, like, what's the big deal? You know, it certainly didn't occur to me that she was Plant Yourself podcast material. Boy, was I wrong. It turns out Emily has been suffering since the age of 7 with type 2 reflex sympathetic dystrophy, RSD, now known in medical circles as complex regional pain syndrome, but we'll stick to RSD since that term, the term Emily uses. And it is a beast of a disorder, triggered by an innocent-seeming wrist sprain from a gymnastics fall when she was in second grade. Emily's RSD led to changes in her bone and skin, tissue swelling, and extreme sensitivity to touch and constant agonizing pain. So the key feature of Emily's RSD was the constant firing of pain signals from the brain, even in the absence of any sort of physiological damage. And the worst part was, the RSD went undiagnosed for 14 years. 14 years of a childhood with this invisible disorder that her doctors didn't recognize or understand. 14 years of living with severe pain that was not acknowledged or explained by anyone. 14 years of fruitless surgeries, prescriptions, and other treatment dead ends. And Emily tried to live a normal life, but the disease took its toll mentally and emotionally as well as physically. She suffered from anxiety and depression. She felt suffocated, she said, a slave to this RSD that was dominating every cell in her body. And then Emily decided to take matters into her own hands, including a whole food plant-based diet and a commitment to physical fitness and exercise that actually turned her into a formidable athlete. So Emily's clear that she's not cured, but the plant-based diet has allowed her to feel healthy from the inside out, even as the pain remains. And this pursuit of physical discomfort through hard athletic training has allowed her to kind of reframe the pain of RSD as good soreness, as the kind of discomfort that leads to growth rather than this gratuitous, horrible thing. And in addition to running lots of marathons and other races, Emily took up boxing and crew, more challenge and more discomfort. And in our conversation, we talked a lot about discomfort and how discomfort can be our worst enemy or our best friend. We compared her RSD with the discomfort of transitioning to a plant-based diet, the physical discomfort of cravings and withdrawing, and the social discomfort of being different from your group. So I am indescribably inspired by Emily and her journey. She's another one of those people who blows my feeble excuses out of the water. I hope you find her story of healing as valuable as I have. If you'd like to watch the video of our conversation, you can just find that at the show notes, plantyourself.com/298. Anyway, enjoy this amazing human being and get ready to be real inspired. Without further ado, Emily Scamla, welcome to the Plant Yourself podcast.
Hi, I'm so happy to be here.
Yeah, I'm happy to help you share your story because it's so amazing. So we met at Plant Stock in Black Mountain, North Carolina this past summer, and we ran together in the morning, and you smoked me good, and I just assumed that you were like one of these, you know, runner chicks, like you know, you've been running since the age of 4 and winning all these races, and that's what I told myself to make myself feel better anyway. And then we chatted, and you shared that your story was actually quite different. So,
quite different.
So let's just jump in with it.
Okay. Well, first, I just want to kind of introduce myself. Like you said, my name is Emily. Currently, I'm a senior in college. I'm 21. I live in part-time Pennsylvania, part-time Florida. Right now, I'm in Florida. It's so amazing and warm. I'm a vegan, I'm an avid runner, and I'm a chronic pain sufferer, which I think is the basis of our conversation and how we connected. So I'm very fortunate to be on your podcast, so thank you.
Yeah, so I'm going to Florida tomorrow. I'll be in Sarasota. What should I pack?
It's actually getting chilly for Florida, so in the high 70s.
Gotcha. Okay, good. So I could travel light.
Yes. Okay, so
Great.
I'll just start. I kind of want to talk about first my disorder and kind of break it down and explain what it is.
Yeah, that's great.
So I have a condition called RSD, or reflexive sympathetic disorder. It can also be referred to as complex regional pain syndrome, which is what it's normally referred to as. But I was diagnosed at a young age, and at that time it was called RSD, so I might refer to it as that. Conditions are usually characterized by severe burning or pain, and they affect usually one of your extremities, such as your arm, your leg, or your hand, or even your feet. So there are pathological changes in the bone and in my skin. So I experience excessive sweating, tissue swelling, and extreme sensitivity to touch, which is called allodynia. I suffer specifically from type 2 RSD, which means that there was a high velocity impact at the site of the injury, and that is associated with my nerve injury. So my key symptoms are intense pain that is way out of proportion to the severity of my initial injury. It affects my wrist, my palm, the top of my hand, all the way up to my shoulder, into my neck, and I'm having problems with my back, and kind of my left shoulder in general.
And so you mentioned that there was initial injury. So this wasn't something you were born with. It's something that happened as a result of a trauma.
Right, so usually RSD is an occurrence of a initial sprain, fracture, or break. So I was 7 years old when I sprained my wrist in a gymnastics tournament, and basically I just fell halfway through a movement, and it was a minor sprain. However, that initial injury started my long journey with chronic pain.
So do we know, was there a genetic predisposition or just like weird something that just happened?
Right, so RSD is very rare, and there's no genetic predisposition for like this specifically. It is every patient that usually falls under the RSD spectrum has had an initial injury, and then their pain gets worse as they get older.
So given that it's rare, were people just thinking you were crazy or trying to get attention?
Well, right, it's really hard, especially when you're young, to have an invisible disorder, because my doctors didn't understand my severity of pain. My, friends and family were confused. So for about 14 years, I wasn't diagnosed. So it was a myth. So it was a long process, which is actually something that RSD patients should not have to go through, because it takes about 6 months to 2 years. In that time, if you're not diagnosed, then you will have very limited opportunities to be able to get rid of your pain or to heal. So because I could not find a doctor or a specialist who even had a suggestion that it could be RSD, and they didn't put me through the right testing, it took 14 years to discover and be diagnosed, which then led to me having to deal with this insanely painful lifestyle that can't be reversed.
So there is testing. What sort of testing is available? What are they looking for?
Well, you're really looking for excessive sweating, hair growth patterns that are different than your other arm, nail grow length, and then sensitivity to the heat or the cold. So when I'm in a cold environment, my arm will feel frozen, and the other arm will feel cold, but there's a significant difference. So there's sweat tests that you could go through, and then there's simple observational tests. RSD is very hard to diagnose.
And I guess especially that it's so rare that people aren't taught to look for it.
Correct, yes.
So what sort of treatments were you getting for those 14 years when people didn't have a clue?
For a while, I was going back and forth between physical therapists because my, original initial injury was a sprain. So most of the doctors felt that my sprain had not healed properly. I also had two significant surgeries that led to increased amount of pain. As an RSD sufferer, you want to avoid any surgery, and I was not aware of that because any even touching my arm is painful. So anything that invasive is going to increase your pain 100 times fold. So yeah, I didn't have a good experience with seeing doctors, and the physical therapist didn't help, and they weren't specialized for RSD. So I did not get the right treatment, and it was a lot of going back and forth between seeing doctors, not making any improvements, quitting, and then having too much pain to just sit and do nothing.
So what changed the day you got your RSD diagnosis?
A lot changed. I realized that. Well, my first surgery happened before I knew, and my second surgery happened after. So I think once I was diagnosed, I think it's important to understand that at the time when I was diagnosed, I was still kind of naive to what the tremendous amount of trial and error that RSD patients have to go through. We have to do a lot of intensive therapy that wasn't in my, wheelhouse. I didn't want to do it. I was young, and I kind of felt buried, with all the suggestions that I was getting, and no one was telling me, specifically, how do I make this go away when I want it to go away? So for a while, it took me some time to grasp the idea that this pain wasn't going to go away. It was all about how do I manage it mentally, and how do I continue to make myself strong so that I'm not incredibly weak as the pain spreads throughout my body?
So, watching you run and watching you do hills, it seemed like, you were handling, like I was in pain from that workout, right? So I had no idea that you have this added layer that I, can't even comprehend. What are the standard treatments that weren't working, and what did you find that started to actually help?
I decided to try two pain drugs. And the one was Neurontin. And actually, when I first tried it, I lost almost half of all of my hair, and I got extremely sick on both drugs. That was the first path I decided to take because most RSD patients, when they're diagnosed, are 60 years old. Like, they'll have an initial injury because they're more prone to falling. So because I wasn't my initial injury was when I was so young, and my diagnosis was so long after, I didn't have the capacity to understand, and I just wanted a quick fix. So drugs was the first thing that I experienced, and nothing worked. I got very sick. I might have had a little bit of relief from the pain, but it wasn't significant, and it didn't outweigh my other side effects. Like I said, I then tried, before I knew I was diagnosed with RSD, I tried a surgery to look for a possible cyst, and there was nothing. And my second surgery was 3 years ago. And I knew I had RSD, but I was exhausted from no relief, and the drugs weren't working, and it was taking a toll on me mentally. I was very depressed. I went through a lot of mental battles up and down because of my pain and not being able to manage it. And because it's an invisible disorder, people don't understand. I can look so healthy and vibrant and be doing, activities and playing sports, but I'm still very sick, and it's hard to mentally adjust to that. So the second surgery, I just decided I will look for, I will do an exploratory surgery. So my pain specialist recommended that he would go in and he would look for anything that might be causing discomfort, such as inflammation. Unfortunately, there was nothing, there's nothing wrong with my hand. So I went back to that. Okay, I have RSD. RSD, there's nothing wrong with your hand. Your initial injury has healed. Your brain, you're not no longer sending signals that your injury has healed. So I'm constantly firing pain signals, constantly firing pain signals without relief, and there won't be relief. So I have tried those. I was told that, right where I am now, my next step, if I wanted to pursue pain relief, would be a spinal implant. And I've decided against that because how about active I've become? Mm-hmm. There's a lot of side effects, and that's not something that I want to have to deal with. So right now, there's nothing unless I would want to go back to medication. So It's learning about managing the pain. It's learning about how do I make everything else in my body healthy and strong so that the pain, I can outweigh it. And it just becomes a part of everything else. Like when I work out and I push myself and I become so sore, I've trained my brain to acknowledge my arm and shoulder pain as part of this soreness and that it's making me stronger. So that's, it's all in the mindset. There's nothing else I can do other than take drastic measures to have any pain relief.
Gotcha. So how does your diet play into this?
My diet, and it took me a while. My veganism journey was not, all of a sudden I was whole food plant-based. I was, a vegan junk food for a while during the time that I suffered with some anxiety and depression over everything that was going on. But once I transitioned and my health became pristine and I was able to feel healthy from the inside out, I didn't focus as much on just feeling so sick and tired all the time, because my pain, when it's constantly firing and all you feel is pain all the time and you're eating bad, even if you're eating vegan junk food, you can't feel good. It was impossible to ever feel good. So changing my diet allowed me to feel amazing, change so many things, so many aspects of my life. And that, in return, I was able to handle my pain.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like it's not like the linear relationship. Like I want the story to be you went vegan and your pain went away. Right. That's not how it happened.
No. I mean, I would love to sit here and say that I went vegan and my pain went away. But I think more importantly, because I still have pain and a lot of people might experience something like this, it doesn't matter anymore that I feel pain. It's all about how I changed my mindset, how I changed my body. I was very sick. I was a very sick person and I couldn't even get up. I couldn't shower. And being a vegan, especially a whole food plant-based vegan, which I cannot talk about enough, that's so important. I've found success in athleticism, being mentally stable and feeling happy for the first time in a long time.
So knowing that it's your brain is basically lying to you, right?
Correct.
Right. There's no pain, but your brain, like, does that help in some way to, obviously I can't imagine what your experiences are, but I'm trying to extrapolate to listening to a radio station that's spouting hate and lies. And I get to choose, it's saying all those things, but I don't have to believe it. Is there a way that you sort of distance yourself or disregard or minimize those pain signals, even, because they're real and they're also lies? You know what I'm asking?
I do. It took me a long time because I wanted to bathe my hand. I wanted to not right. I wanted to not have to raise it above my head. You know, for a long time, I couldn't cut my own food. And I just thought that this was the way, you know, it hurts so bad, I'm going to baby it because that's what I need to do. But on the contrary, when I learned about RSD and kind of the science behind it, I started to understand that there's no physical ailment. I have pain, but it's okay to use my arm. I actually just took up boxing and it is the most, you know, excruciating pain I've ever felt, but there's nothing wrong with me. So I kind of have to think about it. It's all a mental battle. I have to think about it as if it's soreness or, you know, just power through. So it's definitely not easy. And, you know, I'm still learning how to deal with it. There are days where the pain, you know, encompasses me and I have off days, but it's far to none compared to where I was.
Mm. And what I'm hearing, and we, you know, I teach this to people, is there's so many people who, you know, are fine and, yeah, and fear pain. They, you know, and they fear like going for a run because of how it's going to make them feel, the soreness, the burning in the lungs, maybe the pain of footfalls. Like, people are terrified of discomfort. And you know, hearing you talk about, like, it already hurts, so why not, like, get something useful out of the hurt?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up about being uncomfortable, because everything I've done to get to where I am now was extremely uncomfortable. And I do feel like our society, no one wants to be uncomfortable. And that plays a role in veganism. And it plays a role in, like you said, athleticism. No one wants to feel uncomfortable. Everyone has ulterior motives and they'll do whatever they can so that they're comfortable. So the fact that I haven't been comfortable in so long and my mindset has developed into, okay, what else can I do to make myself uncomfortable? Because it will balance everything else out. And I know that might not be how other people think, but if you're, you know, if you want to be a vegan, if you want to transition to a plant-based diet, it is uncomfortable. It's uncomfortable on every level, socially, you know, physically. You might see changes, you might, you know, get a lot of backlash, but in order for us to progress personally or not, you need to feel uncomfortable. And I've embodied that, and that's how I deal and I dealt with everything that was thrown at me. So yes, it's hard, but like you said, people don't want that. They just want to feel comfortable and they want it now, and they want what they want. And you just have to push yourself. And if you're able to, if your body allows yourself to do things like go for a run, why would you not want to? And if your body allows yourself to eat plant foods and become the healthiest individual and feel great in your body in every way, why would you not want to, even though it's uncomfortable at first?
Yeah. I mean, what I hear you saying is, like, you're going to be uncomfortable and you can either waste it or you can spend it on benefits.
Yes. I mean, I know now I'm kind of addressing veganism, but people, if you take these steps, you can learn about the common misconceptions. You know, like, what I was aware of was, you know, I would feel weak. I would have an iron deficiency. I would lose my hair. I'd have thyroid problems. But that's not caused by eliminating animal products. It's by, you know, under eating, consuming processed foods, having a damaged digestive system. So because I changed my diet, I felt like I was cheating at life, even though I had, you know, external things that didn't have to do with my diet causing me pain. But I'm able to have limitless energy and smooth digestion, and I radiate happiness, and I know I'm making the right changes for myself, you know, in the environment. So everything else becomes mundane to me.
Mm-hmm. So I'm real curious. You mentioned that you'd had sort of depression and anxiety issues, and there were, you know, days you couldn't raise your arm or cut your own food or take a shower. And now, you know, looking at you, you're amazing in the things that you're exploring that most people wouldn't do. How has that impacted the people around you who've known you through this whole process?
Well, I think people are first confused because it's only been 1 year that I've been officially whole food plant-based. I've been vegan for 3 years, but you know, people thought my vegan, first of all, my friends and family do not understand the capacity of RSD. And I understand completely that it's something that is blind to them and myself. But when I became vegan, I became myself more than ever because I was able to, like I said, handle these external factors. So I think my family was happy, and you know, now I'm this, you know, whole food plant-based vegan, and I think they're very happy for me. But yes, I was depressed for a while, and I think it's important to talk about because I think a lot of people are, and I felt suffocated. You know, when you're depressed and you have anxiety, at the height of it, it spread through my entire life and into every cell of my body. And you're a slave to it. And I thought that I had to be perfect, and, you know, perfectionism doesn't exist. So I'm putting on this happy face, but I'm struggling, and I felt so alone. Yeah. And I didn't know there was so much going on that I couldn't handle.
Mm-hmm. I'm really curious where the perfectionism came from, because I, you know, looking in from the outside to see your disability and to see you have really good excuses to fail at stuff, right? If anyone has a good excuse to not excel, like, oh, I couldn't do my homework, I couldn't lift my pen, I didn't study, or, you know, whatever, like, you know, I would have milked those excuses for all they were worth. Where did perfectionism creep in the midst of all that?
I think because I let my pain take over me for so long, and I was a slave to my pain. Whenever I went to college, I wanted to be healthy and I wanted to thrive like everyone else I was looking at. Mm. I didn't feel like I could baby myself or my pain anymore. I wanted to be healthy, and I wanted to express myself and be able to act, you know, normal in social situations and not have this, you know, depression inside of me or this anxiety over, they don't understand how I feel. And I kind of needed to understand that they wouldn't. So perfectionism came from, it was me putting it on myself and wanting to better myself for, you know, first of all, for other people, but I didn't feel like I was doing myself justice.
Mm-hmm. So the perfectionism, it sounds like it was about making yourself better for others rather than making yourself better for yourself.
Yeah. And, you know, obviously that has changed and developed into wanting to do things and being mentally healthy for myself, but I know a lot of college students feel this way. I know my friends felt this way, and I was unaware of it. Everything becomes heightened, and my stress levels naturally went through the roof. So, of course, everything else would, you know, fall into place with that.
So when you felt increased anxiety and stress, did that exacerbate the pain?
It does. And, you know, it's proven that that will increase any pain. So my pain went through the roof, and I was dealing with having to excel in my academics, which is, you know, hard as someone who can barely write. So everything seemed as though it was falling apart. And I think that's where my depression kind of came in, because I felt as though if I didn't take control, my life was going to unravel into, you know, complete unhappiness because of these external situations, and I couldn't handle them. So I had to just kind of think to myself, I want to fully live my life. I don't want to live how I'm living. And it took a long time for me to develop that into something that was tangible.
Yeah, I'm sort of playing with this irony on like two levels. One is that like what you wanted to do in college, what anyone wants to do is sort of fit into a social group and be normal. And so, you know, I'm just trying to imagine like having to have this, you know, just have to decide, do I have this conversation with this person? Do I have it now? Do I get to know them better? Do I need to have it at all? What about dating? What about all those, you know, the issues of just physical touch and affection? And and wanting to be perfect to keep those conversations at bay so they wouldn't need to happen actually made it worse.
Of course. Yeah. And actually my first semester as a freshman, like you said, I was trying to figure out how to fit in. So the first thing I did was sign up to try out to be a novice rower for an NCAA team. And this is from, you know, never working out, not having a clue how to row, and having all this pain that I decided I would hide. So it was definitely something that ended up not working out. But I did row for a year, and it allowed me to kind of assess, okay, this is how I want my college to go. I want people to see me in this light, and that way I can hide everything else that's going on. So I definitely used it as a cover-up, although it was the beginning of my really hard college experience with depression and anxiety and the pain.
Yeah. And the other level of irony I'm finding is, so what you're describing in terms of sort of alienation from the peer group you wanted to be a part of is kind of how most people think about and fear going whole food plant-based. Like they think, like, if I do this thing, then I'm going to be uncomfortable in social situations. I'm going to be ostracized, or I'm not going to be able to eat with anyone anymore. I'm going to have to... Right. And for you, like that had been your life before you went whole food plant-based.
It was. And, you know, I did isolate myself on purpose, but I also naturally isolated myself because when I started to express my pain and take control, you know, when I started to slowly become a vegan, when I started to run, to the people that I was associated with, you know, that was uncomfortable for them. So whenever you're the person making changes, especially the significant people around you, they are going to feel uncomfortable. So it wasn't, I didn't put those feelings or pressures on myself because I knew that I had to do what I needed to do and people are going to feel that way. And, you know, to this state, those same people don't understand what I'm about, what this whole lifestyle is. But it's about you. It's a personal choice that affects more than you could even think about. It affects your world. So you need to just think about yourself. It's definitely hard. I struggled with it for a while.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, listening to your story, I'm going to come back to this idea of like people who start running or exercising and feel like we try to teach people the difference between like pain or discomfort and damage. And It's like by that definition, like it sounds like the things you do to yourself that cause you pain aren't necessarily causing any damage, right? That your body is working normally on the physical level. There's just sort of this signal that's going off. And it's like, you know, it's like you have like the world's most advanced degree in discomfort.
Yeah, I do. And I don't think there's a way to explain to someone how I'm not overdoing it or damaging myself. Because when I talk about it, it might sound like I'm pushing a disorder or a pain that shouldn't be pushed. But that's the kink with RSD. You need to be able to work through it, and you need to be able to live your life. So when people think that, you know, that's me hurting myself even more, I have to try and remember that I know how I'm feeling and I know what I'm doing. Actually, after my last marathon that I ran, I hurt my foot and I was in a boot for 8 weeks because of severe tendonitis. And when it healed and the MRIs were all beautiful, I still had a little bit of residual pain. And I had to remind myself that you need to learn how to distinguish between RSD pain and there's something wrong pain.
Mm-hmm.
Because with this condition, it's most likely going to spread to other areas. And remember, they're after initial injuries. So it's those kind of things that, you know, I have to learn how to distinguish from. But then once I realize there's nothing wrong, it's okay, you're not hurting yourself, then I think, oh, and I push myself, you know, in other ways. So like when I run, like I've been running some strong 6 minute miles, I am in so much pain and I'm sore and everything hurts while you're doing it. Running is one of the most painful things I do because my shoulder and my arm, the repetitive motion is very painful, but I'm not hurting myself. And this is me compensating for the years and years of feeling not strong and not healthy and not able to do what I want to do.
Hmm. So I pulled up a website based on a Google search. It's the rsds.org. So supporting the CRPS RSD community. And I'm wondering, I haven't spent any time on it, but I'm wondering, you know, if you communicate with other people with this condition, and do they understand your approach to, like, you know, running, hurting yourself, going plant-based, or are you an outlier in that community too?
Honestly, I haven't reached out to communities online, but for a while I was a part of a pain specialist institution called the Pittsburgh Pain Institution, and it was for children. And this is where a lot of toddlers to middle schoolers were being diagnosed with RSD at such an early age that then they were treated for their pain and they had a bright future ahead because it's easily treated when it's first diagnosed. So I became involved with these people, and, you know, obviously they were young and I couldn't fully communicate, but it was very helpful for them to see me and to see how much at that time I was struggling. And I think I motivated them to, you know, do your at-home exercises and, you know, listen to your doctor and, you know, their kids. But I just needed to be aware. I haven't taken it that next step and, you know, found communities. But, you know, it's important for other people to know that it's out there. And I think it's important for these communities to become larger and larger, so doctors and specialists can also be reminded of the condition and to look for it in their patients. Because like I said, I went through many specialists and they didn't know how to look for this kind of disorder or know about it in any way.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. So you see, you're a senior in college right now. So I hated this question when I was a senior in college, but I'm not asking you because of that, but I'm asking you because of your life experience so far. Do you have plans, like, to, you know, like, to do anything, you know, like, what do you want to do with your life given what you know and what you've experienced?
Well, for a while now, I wanted to be a professional commercial pilot. And during the beginning of when that dream kind of became reality and I was getting my FFA medical certification, I wasn't allowed because I was taking, you know, drugs for anxiety and drugs for, at the time, my wrist. And it took me a long time to, you know, wean off of all of that and to become healthy and strong. So that's something I'm very excited for. I'm graduating with a degree in public health, which I think is amazing and very applicable to what I'm interested in. But I hope to turn that around and go to school to be a pilot.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you don't have to join, do you have to join the Air Force to do that?
No, I'm going to go to like a community school that have their own aviation program. It'll take about 9 months to get my ratings and then a year and a half to get my hours. And then I'll be set to interview for regional airlines. So.
Gotcha. So as you go out into the world and meet people, you know, we spoke about your RSD, you know, partly because I'm a nosy podcaster and I just want to know everything about everybody. But I'm wondering, like, how public are you, you know, if you were to, I don't know, wherever you'd go to talk about it or simply, you know, just live your life your way?
So am I, like, willing to talk about my disorder? Is that what you're...
Well, I mean, I know you're willing to because you're doing it here. Yeah. But in terms of, like, what is the... Like, like if you're in a study group and you're just meeting a group of people in a new class, do you talk about it? Do you mention it? You know, like how, you know, like I have a Nike swoosh on my shirt. Do you have like an RSD swoosh that people can?
No, I think, I mean, where I'm coming from, I can't speak for other RSD sufferers, but I just want to be a part of everyone else. And I don't want to have a label. If it comes up and I'm asked about it, or, you know, if I say, oh, my wrist really hurts, I need to take a break, I'm very open to discussing it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I feel great and I don't want other people to think of me in that way. And I know it's completely fine. And chronic pain is something we should all talk about. And it's not anything to be, you know, ashamed of. But I don't think it's necessary. And, you know, I'm perfectly happy keeping it on the down low.
Gotcha. So I guess my last question, I have, you know, it might be a jerky question, in which case you can just say so. But I'm wondering, it's given this horrible condition has given you such insight and clarity and wisdom. I'm wondering, like, are you ever like a little bit grateful for it, or wonder who or what you'd be if things had gone in a different direction?
Yes, I'm definitely grateful. I'm not, you know, obviously I don't wish this upon anyone, but it made me take necessary steps to heal the rest of my body. I don't think I'd be running or boxing or teaching spin classes. I don't know if I would be a vegan. Hopefully I would have found it and, you know, transitioned, but I'm thankful that I have a story that I think other people can relate to, even if they don't have such a chronic pain or pain at this level. Everyone's dealing with something, and it's just how our society is. We're riddled with, you know, mental health issues and physical issues and even simple things like digestion. Like, everyone I talk to has a problem with digestion. And I think because I have so much knowledge about veganism and, you know, now I can talk about athleticism, it's changed the trajectory of how my journey is. So I am grateful for my journey as a whole.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I can feel, you know, that this conversation I'm going to carry it with me on my next run where I feel like quitting.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just finishing Scott and Jenny Jurek's book North about their, you know, record-breaking Appalachian Trail thing. And just near the end, there's this guy who comes to basically to, you know, toughen him up to this, like he's been, you know, broken down by 40 days on the trail. And this guy that he's talking about had not only been awake for 127 hours without sleep, so he understood sleep deprivation, he'd also, like, cut off his own arm without anesthesia to escape from a boulder. And like Scott was saying, like, this is the guy who could speak with authority about the things that I needed to hear. And I feel like you have that in like really important ways, that you're carrying something in a very sort of intense, expanded way that you've gone to the darkest hole and back and brought this gift for the rest of us.
I mean, I hope that's how other people can look at it. I'm really grateful that, that's how it comes off, because it was not an easy experience, but, it was well worth it.
Wow. Any final words or thoughts or anything you wanted to share with us that we didn't get to yet?
I don't think so. During this time, I do have under construction a site where I have more about veganism, more about RSD, and a lot about my athleticism, because that's something that I'm developing. And I have a lot of goals for that. So if, your followers want and the listeners want to email me about anything, any questions, any advice, any stories, I would be grateful to read them. My email is my last name, Skamla, Skamla, at Gmail.
Okay.
And you can find me at Instagram on my last name again, and that's Skamla. And I'll be producing my kind of influencer site that's going to be out soon, so I can interact with people, and especially people my age. I welcome anyone who's struggling with anything. I have a long list, and I have a lot of wisdom I can impose. So anyone and everyone is welcome. I would love to talk to some people and help other people on this journey as well, because it's never too late. We can all make that switch. It's not the end for anyone.
Wow. So, all right. So I'll also post those in the show notes, erskamla@gmail.com and emmskamla on Instagram. So you can get them here or get them at the show notes. I don't know what show this will be yet, but if you just search for Skamla in the top box on the right, on the search box, they will find you.
Thank you. And I just want to say one more thing, that I guess the takeaway that I would want people to know the most is that I found how to live, and living is such a magical thing, and most people just exist. So whatever it is, find what makes you feel you're living.
Beautiful. Which for no reason reminds me that we're also videotaping this. So assuming that the file works out, it will be up on YouTube so people can also get the benefit of your radiant smile. as well as the hopeful and beautiful timbre of your voice.
Amazing. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Emily Skamla, thank you so much for sharing this journey and for all the light and hope and love you bring into the world. I'm honored to spend this time with you.
I am too. Thank you.
All right. How was that for an instructive and inspirational conversation? Man, I love doing this podcast. If you enjoyed this episode of the Plant Yourself Podcast a tenth as much as I did, and you'd like to support our mission, you can subscribe and leave a review on iTunes. You can also share this on social media, and you can become a patron of the show. Just go to plantyourself.com, search on the right sidebar for the Patreon link, and you can help to support the mission. If you're new to the show, you can catch up on 297 archived episodes over at plantyourself.com. And if you'd like to read the show notes for today's episode and watch the YouTube of our interview, you can do that at plantyourself.com/298. So Well Start Health is doing another cohort. We're starting in January. So you can sign up now and we can drip you little tidbits to help you prepare for getting a clean start on the New Year's. You just go to wellstarthealth.com, click on program, and you can then click apply. And no obligation, just let us know you're interested, and we'll confirm all the details with you after the application process and hopefully get you up and running for a fantastic 2019. No garden news to speak of this week. And running news on Thanksgiving morning, did a strong 14 miles with Gio on a hilly terrain, felt real good about that. And the last couple of days, I've been doing the usual 6-mile stomps. All right, so let's do the thanks and get this one in the can and out into the world. Thanks, of course, to Will Ridenour. Let's hear it. Sabali Don, the Dance of Peace, the theme music for the show. Check out willridenour.com for more of his beautiful Kora music. And, of course, thanks to all of you, Plant Yourself podcast patrons, the people who help make this show happen every single week, as in Kim Harrison, Lynn McClellan, Anthony Disson, Brittany Porter, Dominic Marrow, Barbara Whitney, Tammy Black, Amy Good, Amanda Hatherly, Mary Jane Wheeler, Alan Kennelly, Melissa Cobb, Rachel Barons, Christine Nielsen, Tina Sharp, Dean Ahern, Jen Volinovsky, David Vizek, The Mysterious Michelle X, Elspeth Feldman, Victoria Dolomanova, Leah Stoller, Alan Christensen, Colleen Peck, Michelle Andrew, Josina, Julianne Roland, Stu Dolnick, Sarah Durkis, from the Circus, Kelly Cameron, Wayne Pedersen, Leanne Peterson, Janet Selby, Claire Adams, Tom Franzek, Jeanette Bedham, Gil Lassert, David Donahue, Blair Seibert, Dorona Vizov, Jew and Carolyn Argentati, Jody Friesen, Ruth Ann Funderburk, Misha Rosen, Michael Warbeck. The equally mysterious Tracy Z, Alicia Lemus, Rebecca Hughes, Val Linneman, Rhymes with Cinnamon, Nick Harper, Stephanie Holmes, Martha Bergner, Nicole Ramsey, Susan Ahmad, Molly Levine, the inscrutable Harry R., Susan Laverty, the Panda Vegan, Craig Kovic, Adam Scharf, Karen Burry, Heather Morgan, Ashley Corcoran, Kelly Machia, Dan Norton, Bonnie Lynch of Plant Happy Oregon, Sabina Kurtzels, Nigel Davies, Marion Blum, Teresa Copel, Shell Rudless, Julian Watkins, Breed O'Connell, Brian Sheridan, Shannon Hirschman, Kate Rosland, Ayat, Julie Lang, Home Hedda Gardiza, Tuzan Wakani, Hainline, Aaron Greer, Alicia Davis, Aviva Lael, Heather O'Connor, Carolyn Jensen, Cherry Larkowski of Plant Power for Health. Karen Smith, Scott Mirani, Karen and Joe Crabtree, Tanya Lewis, Kirby Burton, Teresa Carell, Kevin McCauley, Elizabeth Rothschild, Kelly Baker Miracle, Ann Jesse, Cheryl Dwyer, Jenny Hazelton, Valerie Peltier, Peter W. Evans, Colleen Harrison, Justine Divitt, Joshua Sommermeyer, Dennis Bird, Darby Kelly, Lori Fanny, Linnea Lundquist, Valerie Hummel, Deb Casilla, Emily Iconelli, Levy Wallach, Rosamund McAtee, Dan Picorni, Stephen Leenan, Patty V. Martino, Mike and Donna Kartz, Deanne Bishop, Bilbury Elf, Gunter Schmidt, Marjorie Lewis, and Kelly Molden for your generous support of the podcast. That's it for this week. As always, be well, my friends.